Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan, South Sudan, and the rest of Africa this Friday, February 14, 2025. Authorities in Jonglei State detain traders transporting game meat to Juba.
I'm also requesting our government if they can really consider wildlife to go back and do this checkpoint so that there is a reduction in transporting this meat to Juba.
And African Union Council members discuss the future of Africa.
As a continent, we advocate for a reformed global governance, including the reform of the United Nations Security Council.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Three traders have been arrested for transporting bushmeat from Bor to Juba. The Ministry of Wildlife Conservation and Tourism says a lack of laws to control poachers and the recent order by the South Sudan People's Defense Forces to remove roadblocks along the roads to Juba contribute to wildlife poaching. For VOA News, Dennis Logonyi reports from Bor.
Major Cole Amome, wildlife conservation officer in charge of operations along the Juba Bor Road, says his agency received information that led to the detention of three men for smuggling bushmeat.
Since checkpoints were abolished, we have not been working. Vehicles have been taking bushmeat, but we don't have an order to arrest a car. We received information from Bor that there is a car full of bushmeat and carrying more than 48 animals. I gave orders to my soldiers to be on standby. At 5:30 a.m., two vehicles arrived. One escaped to Juba and another one returned to Mangala. I sent the soldiers to follow it and got them at the college.
Presently, the South Sudan People's Defense Forces shut down many checkpoints on the roads into Juba. The SSPDF said the checkpoints were legally used to solicit bribes, but some South Sudanese say the move allows illegal goods to travel more easily. Santos John is one of the bushmeat traders were arrested. He tells VOA his colleagues tipped him off that bushmeat was available in Bor.
This meat, I got it from Bor because it was sold in the open, so I thought there was no problem. That's why I had to buy it. This is my first time to buy. I used to buy from the market, from traders who bought them to us. The small one, I used to buy at 30,000. Then I asked it why it was expensive, and they told me the place is far. I asked it how I can get there. They told me it is being sold in Bor at a place called Akon Ayon. I got one animal at SSP 100,000 and some at SSP 75,000.
Agrela Suwani, the Assistant Director General for Law Enforcement at the Ministry of Wildlife Conservation and Tourism, says a lack of proper laws to limit poaching has allowed it to grow.
This is really challenging for us wildlife because they are getting that as a chance because they are not longer checkpoints that our forces are now checking vehicles. So they use that as a chance to take a lot of meat from Jonglei side to Juba. I'm also requesting our government if they can really consider wildlife to go back and do this checkpoint so that there is a reduction in transporting this meat to Juba.
Wilson Lodiong is the chairperson for the Parliamentary Committee on Wildlife at the Transitional National Legislative Assembly. He says once legislation on wildlife conservation is passed, it will reduce the rampant poaching.
The bill that is in front of my table now is on the third reading stage, and it is very much needed to put the law into action so that they can now be able to sentence anybody that is caught with this kind of thing and be sentenced to prison. It is unfortunate that the members of parliament are on recess, but otherwise I would have tabled it the third and final reading and it will be signed into law. And we have already made all the necessary arrangement for presenting it to the parliament so that once it is discussed, it will be passed and it will be signed by the president into law.
The availability of small arms and light weapons has encouraged poaching and hunting in South Sudan. The Tiang, a subspecies of the Topi antelope, is the most poached animal in the Jonglei corridor. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Bor.
From Bor, we go to Addis Ababa, where the African Union summit is getting started, with the 55-nation organization facing multiple challenges. AU officials tell VOA the escalating conflict in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo and the drastic cuts in humanitarian aid from the United States will top the agenda. For VOA News, Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
South African international relations expert Kingsley Makubela says the Addis Ababa meeting is set to be very tense because there are great divisions between members about how to approach various crises.
This summit is going to be different from other summits. It's taking place at the time of global turbulence, at the time of multipolarity that is not clearly defined. It's taking place when in the White House you have somebody who advocates total different approaches, who has declared economic war with Europe, China, and everyone else, and Africa included in that equation.
U.S. President Donald Trump has frozen most foreign aid for 90 days, throwing into question billions of dollars of assistance for Africa. The U.S. leader says it's part of his America First agenda and that it's time for others to provide large-scale developmental assistance globally and for Africa to be less dependent on foreign help. Makubela says the AU needs to come up with plans to fill the gaps left by the sudden lack of U.S. funding. Otherwise, many Africans could die from starvation and infectious diseases. Then there's the fighting in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, where M23 rebels have beaten back Congolese troops and forces from South Africa, Tanzania, and Malawi. Speaking at a pre-summit event hosted by the South African Institute of International Affairs in Johannesburg, Congolese political analyst Hubert Kabasu said it's a severe blow to the AU's credibility that it has been unable to end decades of conflict in the DRC. According to the United Nations and the Kinshasa government, Rwanda is backing the rebels. Rwandan President Paul Kagame says his troops are in eastern DRC only to protect Rwanda's borders and accuses Kinshasa of sheltering a Rwandan rebel group that wants to oust his government. Kabasu says the AU must decide what to do about Kigali's involvement in the war and DRC President Felix Tshisekedi's unwillingness to speak with M23 leaders.
If you look at it from the perspective of Kinshasa, they say the international community is not activating sanctions robust enough to stop Rwanda and other factions. And Congolese politicians and civil society in Kinshasa, on the contrary, they say that international community, including also SADC and EAC, are not exerting sufficient pressure on Kinshasa for Kinshasa to accept dialogue and also for Kinshasa regime to curtail predatory politics, erratic politics, repression, rampant murders of politicians.
So says the analyst, the AU must find solutions to a multidimensional crisis in eastern DRC. Otherwise, he says, it could easily become a war involving multiple countries. Recently elected AU Commissioner Lerato Matabohe of South Africa tells VOA conflicts won't end unless there's sustained Africa-driven development on the continent.
My number one priority will be to address the issue of energy poverty that is on our continent. We have 600 million Africans that have zero access to electricity as we speak. We are talking about a continent that only has 25% of broadband access. We are talking about a continent that has fragmented infrastructure. We are unable to trade with one another. We've got 18% intra-Africa trade levels. How do we make sure that we crowd in the resources that we need to move our infrastructure forward? We've got the right plans. We've got the program for infrastructure development.
But Makubela says the AU's always been good at making plans. Implementation, however, is where its weakness lies. The heads of government from the AU states arrive in Addis Ababa today, ahead of the summit sessions on Saturday and Sunday. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Still on African Union, members of the African Union Executive Council, who met in Addis Ababa this week, called for cooperation among members to confront challenges and exploit resources independently instead of depending on other countries. Mamer Abraham Quart reports for VOA from Malakal.
The African Union Executive Council met this week to discuss justice for Africans and people of African descent through reparations for slavery. The council members also pushed for reforms of multilateral institutions. Africa has only 3 non-permanent members of the United Nations Security Council without veto powers. Gideon Timotheos is the Ethiopian Minister of Foreign Affairs.
As a continent, we advocate for a reformed global governance, including the reform of the United Nations Security Council. We also call for an international financial system that supports Africa's growth and enables the continent to tackle its challenges effectively. We demand access to climate financing and technology. These efforts and the need to overcome man-made and natural disasters requires us to stand united and use our continental organization as an effective instrument to advance our collective aspirations.
The AU, with its 54 member states, was formed in 2002 to replace the Organization of African Unity. One of its goals is to promote unity, solidarity, and cooperation among member states. Mohamed Salem Al-Marzouk, Mauritania's Minister of Foreign Affairs and Cooperation, says the AU should work toward its vision.
Regardless of the scenario, the only useful organization for us is the African Union. Africa will never be strong should this assembly not address all of the ideas that were championed.
The chairperson of the African Union Commission, Moussa Faki, says the conflicts in Sudan and Democratic Republic of Congo are a challenge to member states.
And our difficulties and the challenges which we continue to face from all sides. Violent conflicts continue to kill on a large scale in Africa. The Sudan and Eastern DRC, that is the Democratic Republic of the Congo, are in all respects the most poignant, the most tragic theaters. The difficult financing of our organization continues to weigh heavily on its effectiveness and independence of decision making. The revitalization of the Peace Fund and the attainment of its first objective is encouraging.
The African Union's Vision 2063 states that Africa shall have a flourishing culture of human rights, democracy, gender equality, inclusion and peace, security and safety of all citizens. That vision also includes programs to boost Africa's economic growth and development. For VOA News, I am Amer Abraham Court, reporting from the Upper Nile State's capital, Malakal.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, U.S. President Donald Trump signs agreements with India. Find out more after the break.
Listener of South Sudan in Focus, we have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. U.S. President Donald Trump on Thursday made a range of energy and defense agreements with Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi on his first visit to the White House in Trump's second term. But the gains were offset by Trump's threat to impose reciprocal tariffs on trading partners, something India sought to avoid. VOA's Anita Paul reports from the White House.
A warm welcome for Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi with a stack of defense and energy deals. Yet overshadowed by President Donald Trump's decision the same day to hold the threat of reciprocal tariffs over U.S. trading partners. Trump announced a host of agreements on energy, space, and defense, including, notably, India's possible entry into the F-35 program, currently limited to an elite group of close allies.
The U.S.-India Compact for the 21st century is a historic initiative that will deepen every aspect of our partnership and our friendship. Starting this year, we'll be increasing military sales to India by many billions of dollars. We're also paving the way to ultimately provide India with the F-35 stealth fighters.
But then a same-day order to launch a review for reciprocal tariffs. Trump, appearing beside Modi, framed this as his effort to reduce a long-running trade deficit with India. Modi joked that he had been inspired by Trump to mint a new slogan based on Trump's Make America Great Again. Make India great again. He stressed cooperation in energy, especially on small modular nuclear reactors and on defense contracts.
When America and India work together, that is when MAGA plus MEGA becomes MEGA. It's a mega partnership for prosperity.
Analysts say India plays a key role amid China's increasing ambitions, and Modi has recently made moves to build India's defenses. Tamanna Salakuddin, Director for South Asia Programs at the U.S. Institute of Peace.
India plays a significant role along with Japan, Australia, and the U.S. In terms of thinking about building partners and allies across the Indo-Pacific. This was something that the first Trump administration really focused on.
India watchers say that while the stakes are high for both, New Delhi has more to lose. Richard Rosso is with the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
As President Trump kind of initiates a trade war against the world, India's got bigger stakes than a lot of countries do in that. And they need to make sure that relations remain stable. So if they want to talk about policy issues, they can resolve and try to make sure that things remain on an even keel, because this relationship, it's important for us. It's vital for India.
Modi, a keen political operator who has led the world's largest democracy for more than a decade, is clearly aware of that, taking the time to meet recently with not only the U.S. vice president in France, but also the South African billionaire in Washington, Elon Musk, who has taken an active role in reshaping the U.S. government. Anita Powell, VOA News, The White House.
From matters to do with trade, we go to artificial intelligence. At this week's Artificial Intelligence Action Summit in Paris, world leaders and technologists gathered to discuss the rapidly evolving field of generative artificial intelligence. Many are eager to join the global AI race, while others are proceeding with a lot of caution. Tina Tring reports.
At this week's Artificial Intelligence Action Summit in Paris, world leaders and technologists gathered to discuss the rapidly evolving field of generative artificial intelligence, weighing risks against rewards.
Who decides what problems AI should or should not resolve? Who benefits most from its deployment? Who bears the cost of its mistakes? These questions affect everyone, and so the answers must also involve everyone.
The race to build the best AI has become geopolitical, and questions around safety and governance are coming to a head. Some, like U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance, are making the case for less regulation.
The development of cutting-edge AI in the U.S. is no accident. By preserving an open regulatory environment, we've encouraged American innovators to experiment and to make unparalleled R&D investments.
The U.S. and the United Kingdom declined to add their names to a declaration calling for more inclusive and sustainable AI, but China signed on. A UK spokesperson said there was not enough practical clarity on global governance. As for the U.S., the threat of exploitation by state actors prompted a more protectionist stance.
Some authoritarian regimes have stolen and used AI to strengthen their military, intelligence, and surveillance capabilities, capture foreign data, and create propaganda to undermine other nations' national security. I want to be clear. This administration will block such efforts, full stop. We will safeguard American AI and chip technologies from theft and misuse.
The sentiment appears to be at odds with U.S. AI companies like OpenAI, the creator of ChatGPT.
Are we worried about China?
We'd like to work with China.
Do you think your government would let you do that?
Do I know that for sure? No. Should we try as hard as we can? Absolutely, yes. I mean, I think that's really important.
Some say an open, collaborative approach can engender more safety in AI.
The idea that, you know, technology can be transparent, everybody can see how it works, you can fix it, is actually the friend of safety.
Whether the AI race tilts towards regulation or safety, the summit should serve as a wake-up call, said French President Emmanuel Macron.
If we let the Americans and the Chinese have the champions all to themselves, we can be sure of one thing. We might have the best regulations in the world, but we won't regulate anything. So we are in the race. We are fully committed, and we will see it through to the end.
In the global AI race, remaining competitive means striking the right balance between innovation and regulation. Tina Trin, VOA News.
It's time to hear from you what you think about this show and some of the issues we have been talking about. Tok Chun Yo Kwai from Juba, South Sudan writes, "Hello, VOA. Happy World Radio Day to all VOA staff in South Sudan and the United States, especially Manyang David Mayar and John Tanza, plus all the listeners of VOA." Samuel Ramonye writes, "Hello, VOA South Sudan in Focus. The ongoing crisis in Western Equatorial State sounds like a plan which was done by the national elite MPs who are fond of confusing people at the ground level to achieve their self-interests. I wish time for election should come quickly so that we can elect our representatives who can direct us to the right direction, to the last destiny, to avoid the next generation committing the mistakes we have committed." That's according to Samuel Remo. Another listener who calls himself Jacob Dior Machuang in Rumbek, Lake State, writes, "The World Radio Day is a memorable one where we acknowledge the role the radio has played in our lives. To me, in particular, radio has shaped me to be who I am today. It has given me friends for life in different parts of the country and around the world. My heartfelt appreciation goes to Radio Miraya, Voice of America, and BBC Africa. Last but not least, may we use radio positively to change negative thoughts in our society," he concludes. Another listener from Yambia who calls himself Jones Arek writes, "I would like to share with you, John Tanza, about the political instability going on around in Yambio town since the removal of the former governor last Monday evening. It had brought a lot of tension. Gunshots at night remains in other residential areas, and this has created more chaos among civilians. I urge the national government, together with the UN mission in South Sudan, to bring total peace to the state as farmers are preparing to go for cultivation." Another listener who calls himself Daniel Ariek Michael Inye writes, "As we celebrate World Radio Day on the 13th of February 2025, I want to express my sincere happiness on this colorful day. Radio has played a great role in our lives and the society at large in such a way that it informs us of current events happening around us and around the world. Radio also became one of my favorite hobbies, especially radios with their programs such as VOA South Sudan in Focus, Straight Talk Africa, Daybreak Africa, and Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. Radio Miraya, iRadio, and other radios also make me love radio. They are important to us with their educative documentaries. I love radio," he concludes. Another listener who writes, "John Tanja, I am Stephen Musema Julius in Nyumbe." He writes, "South Sudanese leaders need to learn from the current freezing of U.S. funding to Africa. Come together and bring peace to the country and build your economy for better sustainable development." Another listener called Akol Zulu Nicholas from Kwajok, Block 14 in Warap State writes, "I urgently appeal to the government of Warap State to deploy security personnel along Gogoriel East, Tonchnot County, and Twitch County of Warap State to protect civilians from attackers who are coming from the neighboring Unity State. We are tired of revenge killing and we have lost lives. Let us come together as South Sudanese and put aside our differences and sit under one umbrella. How about trying that? Another listener who calls himself James Chadenga, and he says he's original South Sudanese, currently based in Uganda in a refugee camp. He writes, "We are so sorry to hear about our Vice President James Waniga, who was fired on Monday. Where is South Sudan heading exactly?" He asks. Another listener, Peter Anyangdol Majongdol in Jonglo Estate, town of Bor, writes, "With the swearing in of the new Vice President for Economic Cluster, I was moved by his speech of addressing the outstanding civil servant salaries and the economic reform. This will only be achieved when security and infrastructure like road are improved, such that citizens can have food to eat and not depending on government salaries and imported food from neighboring countries." Another listener who calls himself Hakim Adinga from Yei writes, "I urge the government of South Sudan to understand that changing leaders all the time, but they need to find a political solution for the country's problems." Views expressed in this segment does not represent the opinion of Voice of America or the management of South Sudan in Focus. Keep your comments coming, and our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. That's all we prepared for you this Friday, February 14, 2025. We now leave you with Jamnazi Africa and the song "I Am Not Sober." We have been listening to Jamnazi Africa and the song "I Am Not Sober," but I'm sober here in the studio on behalf of our producer Kwame Ofori and engineer Helen. We wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening, and if you miss this broadcast, go to www.voaafrica.com for more information on our programs. Constructor.